Hello, and welcome to the Career Compass program, which includes online learning sessions, podcasts, videos, webinars, white papers, and whiteboard videos, all specifically designed for NAVFAC. Please check the Career Compass Resource Center, or CCRC, often for updates and new content to support your learning. This content will assist with learning and development within the 20 non-technical competencies outlined in the Workforce Development Strategy. Today's topic is tough negotiations, breaking deadlocks and getting negotiations back on track in support of the influencing and negotiating competency. The prospect of negotiating may induce stress or anxiety, which is understandable. But if you think about it, you negotiate all the time. What to have for dinner, where to go on vacation, maybe even the temperature in your home. These are all examples of negotiation you make on a regular basis. Similarly, you negotiate frequently at work, including everyday things like deadlines and distribution of work, so you're probably better at influencing and negotiating than you may give yourself credit for. However, when you're involved in more complex negotiations with higher stakes, you may experience anxiety or nervousness. Feeling nervous or anxious is your brain's way of telling you that you need to prepare. At NAVFAC, contract details, purchasing agreements, and elements of construction, maintenance, and land deals are all negotiated frequently, but no two deals are ever the same. For this reason, preparation is crucial to a successful negotiation. Prepare by planning your negotiating style and strategy. Determine this by understanding your goals and what you might be willing to concede to your counterpart. This might require discussions with stakeholders on your side of the negotiation. Learn as much as you can about your counterpart's goals as well, and the negotiating style they are likely to employ. Visit their website if they have one, or speak to others who have negotiated with them in the past. Offer to exchange preparation materials with them in advance where appropriate. Doing so helps you prepare and may also set the stage for a more cooperative negotiation. Even in cases where the stakes are high or significant money is at stake, negotiations don't have to be combative or even competitive. A lot depends on how you plan, prepare for, and approach a negotiation. Preparation is good practice no matter what, but it especially pays off when you find yourself in a tough situation where the discussion is deadlocked and it feels like agreement can't be reached. Let's talk about what to do when that happens. People often assume negotiations have to be adversarial. That assumption puts them into a combative mindset from the start and greatly increases the likelihood of conflict and deadlock. So even before we talk about how you break a deadlock, let's acknowledge that good, productive negotiations tend to be cooperative and collaborative. In most cases, you should adopt that mindset and posture in preparation and at the outset of the negotiation, so that you're more likely to avoid deadlocks in the first place. Of course, your counterpart may not cooperate no matter how hard you try, so you should be ready and able to adjust your style based on how a given negotiation is progressing. It is important to remember that even when negotiations get combative, tough, or are deadlocked, you should not abandon the tenets of respect, deep listening, and empathy. You'll gain more influence by demonstrating respect for and understanding of opposing arguments than you will by issuing ultimatums or simply reiterating your own demands. So your first strategy and tactic in breaking deadlocks should be to avoid them in the first place. But if they happen, take the high road. Use respect, deep listening, and empathy to break them. Taking the high road is easier said than done. Recognize that when you're in a heated negotiation, your counterpart's demands and arguments may trigger your flight or fight response. When this happens in a negotiation, your immediate instinct may be to fight. Doing so usually gets you and the negotiation nowhere. So stop. Take a deep breath, and perhaps rephrase what you've just heard. Ask a question, lean in, and listen. If that doesn't work, reconsider your flight instinct. In this case, suggest a break in the negotiations to allow things to cool down. By genuinely listening and asking your counterpart for their thoughts, you gain influence because they feel heard. Next, shape and adjust the negotiation as it goes forward by looking for something in your counterpart's argument that you can build on. Find common ground by asking more questions and then repeating back what you hear, both to make sure you understand and to highlight areas of agreement. This moves your counterpart towards collaboration and mutual problem-solving. For example, your counterpart asks for something that you know your side is prepared to offer anyway. If so, ask, "What if?" What if we were willing to meet you halfway on that or even go further? Would that help in our discussions about X? Your counterpart might never make the first concession. If you've prepared well, you know what you're ready to concede before the negotiations start, so you can use those things when the going gets tough and you need to break a deadlock. Both in preparation and during the negotiation, consider how you can position or frame the negotiation toward cooperation and a win-win outcome. In the social psychology literature, framing describes the cognitive biases that often cause people to make decisions or take actions depending on the context and/or connotations in which options are presented. For example, you've likely encountered salespeople who use frames as anchors by showing you higher-cost items before discussing the item you may have initially expressed interest in. This can make you feel like you're getting a better deal and/or make you more willing to buy the lower-cost item. Likewise, if you frame two equal prospects, one as a potential gain, the other as a potential loss, significantly more people will choose to avoid the loss than attempt the win. As another example, when people are told they have a sure chance of winning $3,000, or they can risk it on an 80% chance of winning $4,000 with a 20% chance of winning zero, most balk at the risk and take the sure thing. However, when told they face a sure loss of $3,000 or can take an 80% chance of losing $4,000 with a 20% chance of losing nothing, most people take the risk in the hopes of losing nothing. This type of framing involves loss aversion. The prospects are equal, but most people dislike loss more than they enjoy gains. Another type of frame is called choice architecture. For example, when renewing their driver's license, people in many jurisdictions are presented the choice of becoming a potential organ donor. In most places, they must check off a box to opt in. In these cases, the great majority do not opt in. However, when organ donation is assumed and people have to check a box to opt out again, the vast majority don't check the box. Just by framing the choice differently, the state or locality gains enormous numbers of potential organ donors. In tough negotiations, framing may not be that simple. So even in preparation, start framing the negotiation as cooperative and collaborative rather than competitive. First, send materials relevant to the negotiation ahead of time to demonstrate cooperativeness, and be transparent. If you can, decide where the negotiation will be held so that you can arrange seating that promotes a mutual problem-solving atmosphere. If you do find yourself in a negotiation that turns combative and you find yourself deadlocked, use framing as one of your tools to turn things around. Most often, this means slightly reframing your own position or proposal. In some cases, you might also reframe your counterpart's demands in somewhat different terms. Think about the examples above, how setting expectations and emphasizing gains over losses can have a profound impact on people's choices and actions. During the negotiation, you learn more about your counterpart's goals, which lets you rephrase each other's positions or demands so that they align better. This depends on deep listening and questioning to find common ground. And again, it depends on preparation before the negotiation so that you know where your side is willing to make concessions. In preparation, you may also learn things about your counterpart's goals that will help you reframe them toward a mutual win-win. Finally, if, despite all of your preparation and efforts to steer the negotiation toward cooperation, you remain deadlocked, consider moving to an avoidance style to postpone the negotiation. After all, resolution seems unlikely at this point unless you capitulate. Taking a break gives you and your counterpart time to cool down, reset your approach, and get the negotiations back on track. If this doesn't work, propose the involvement of a mediator where appropriate and possible. As a last resort, you may have to switch to a more competitive style to match your counterparts. It is possible that they might have misinterpreted your collaborative style as a weakness. If so, stand your ground. This might provoke a more cooperative response. Thank you for listening to this podcast. We hope that you gleaned useful and helpful information. If you have any questions, please contact your local civilian training advocate or contact HQ's BD-17 at NAVFAC HQ Total Force Development at Navy.mil.